Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Monday, November 8th, and I'm your reader, Bob Young. Let's take a quick look at the weather. One last milder day, cold and windy weather later this week. Today is the warmest of the next 9 days, and probably the clearest as well. Enjoy some mid-60s this afternoon, with a light northwest wind. A cold front will knock the temperatures down a bit, going into tomorrow, as clouds build. We're still expecting the next stronger cold front to come through here Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday night, which will bring the rain chances as well. This front will cause gusty wind both Thursday and Friday, and will probably be cold enough for some flurries on Friday. No accumulation is expected at this time. Now let's look at the stories on the front page. Waterloo Legion's new book honors namesake heroes. Cedar Falls business cleans windows to aid breast cancer patients, making banks. And let's begin reading the lead story, Weird Weather, Bumper Crops. Johnston, Iowa and the nation could be headed for record corn yields despite uneven weather throughout the year, state agriculture and climate experts say. Iowa corn is forecast at 2.5 billion bushels, averaging 201 bushels an acre, an increase of 24 bushels per acre on average over last year, according to the latest information from the Federal Agriculture Department. Quote, it seems to be getting bigger every time we look at it. When we're looking nationwide, you're talking about the largest production we've ever seen. Chad Hart, a professor of agricultural economics, said Friday during taping of Iowa Press for Iowa PBS. Quote, so we are talking massive corn crop, unquote. Hart said soybeans appear headed for similarly big yields. Soybeans in Iowa are forecast at 611 million bushels at an average of 61 bushels per acre, up 7 bushels per acre from last year, according to federal information. This impending bumper crop is on its way despite a year that saw severe drought conditions throughout much of Iowa for much of the summer, then persistent rains that led to one of the wettest Octobers on record. Quote, it has been a roller coaster, Justin Glisson, state climatologist. Quote, we have been in a structural drought since May of 2020, and we've had ebb and flow. We've had heat waves, we've had cold weather outbreaks, we've had very dry conditions. Quote, so it's remarkable that we had the 10th wettest October on record really supplied us with additional subsoil moisture for next growing season. But those timely rainfalls during the growing season really held the crop on and the yields look great, unquote. Hart said the proliferation of hybrid corn options has helped protect crops from the kind of fluctuating weather Iowa experienced this year. Quote, what we have done over the past 40, 50, 60 years with these hybrids is we have developed hybrids that are more tolerant of a wider range of weather conditions, and those changes are definitely paying off as we look out there, Hart said. Next is another installment in the Courier's feature, 20 Under 40. This column was submitted by Pat Kinney, Rhinebeck. Andrea DeVore, 39, is an artist, and buildings are her canvas, bank buildings specifically. She is a facilities manager for Lincoln Savings Bank with 19 locations from Des Moines to Waterloo. She oversees all new construction for the bank. It originated in Rhinebeck in 1902, but in recent years has established a significant presence in Waterloo with its renovation and remodeling of space at the Cedar Valley Tech Works for what LSB calls its central campus. DeVore has led $20 million worth of projects in her 7 years at Lincoln Savings Bank, having previously worked in commercial design with Story Kenworthy. Andrea is the key visionary for modernizing our recent office space additions at LSB, said bank executive Tori Greenwood. She is bright, focused, and extremely talented at what she does, and at the same time, a very pleasant, energetic, and respectful colleague. She has exemplified true leadership while working on 3 multi-million dollar building projects concurrently and has done it with innovative design and the utmost professionalism. Andrea's most recent project at LSB, the impressive TechWorks remodel, truly represents Andrea at her best, transforming a historical industrial building into beautiful, forward-thinking office space that promotes a culture of collaboration and community, Greenwood said. Quote, on a project that lasted approximately 3 years, Andrea successfully dealt with a myriad of details, challenges, and personalities all at once, oftentimes being the only woman in the room, and she does it with confidence and elan. Greenwood said DeVore impressively pulled off a trifecta when she opened LSB's Ingersoll Drive office in Des Moines during the COVID-19 pandemic, and LSB's newest branch at 3rd and Main Street in Cedar Falls, while simultaneously handling the TechWorks project, all in the last 3 years. Born and raised in Dubuque and a graduate of Wallert High School, DeVore attended the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls and received a degree in interior design. She worked in commercial design for 10 years. After stints in Minneapolis and Cedar Rapids at Story Kenworthy, her husband Donovan, whom she met at UNI, got an engineering degree from the University of Iowa and a job at John Deere, and they settled in Rhinebeck, her husband's and LSB's hometown. Quote, we wanted to start a family and raise our kids in a small town, and that's where we ended up, she said. They have two boys and a girl, ages 7, 5, and 2. She never thought she'd end up working for a bank with a degree in interior design. Quote, since we're a community bank, we want to fit the community and what works in that community, she said. Quote, I always try to do a deep dive on what the surrounding area looks like, who our customers are, and match our branch to that location, unquote. Whether in a larger city or a small town, the TechWorks project, built on empty upper floors of a former Deere manufacturing building, was an achievement of note. The TechWorks campus consists of a pair of renovated former Deere manufacturing buildings. One building, where LSB and the Gros Cedar Valley Economic Development Organization are located, is converted for office and light industrial use. The other houses a courtyard by Marriott Hotel. Quote, when we started the project, it needed a new roof. So it was wet and it was dark. There were no lights, DeVere said. But she saw the potential in the natural light. Quote, when we had an amazing view of the whole downtown Waterloo, we have all these beautiful windows, and we wanted all our staff to be able to enjoy that. So we really kept it open so our staff can take it all in. They're on the 5th and 6th floors above Gros Cedar Valley offices. Quote, when you walk into a Andrea designed space, you immediately get the sense that LSB is a progressive organization that loves its employees and customers, Greenwood said. She has the vision to create something different and unique while still being functional. DeVore, quote, has made a big impact on the city of Rhinebeck and the Gladbrook-Rhinebeck School District by helping lead the development of the Little Rebels daycare, Greenwood added. It was recognized by Governor Kim Reynolds for its collaborative approach to provide top-notch services, unquote. It has had 2 expansions, and DeVore has helped with the project management of the 2nd of those expansions. While it's a busy pace between work and family, quote, I think Lincoln Savings Bank is good at reminding people you should volunteer, you should have a life outside your work, DeVore said. Quote, when I go home at night, I can shut it off and be with my family, and there's not guilt about that. I'm lucky because I have a very supportive husband. We've always been a partnership and help each other achieve our goals, professionally and personally, unquote. Next, Waterloo Legion Post launches book honoring World War I heroes, filed by Pat Kinney. And the story opens with a photograph of the cover of the book, titled Waterloo Warriors, and the caption says, a new book tells the stories of Waterloo World War I heroes Carl Chapman and Fred Becker. Waterloo. Fred Becker and Carl Chapman played for crosstown rival football teams, but were brothers in arms. Both gave their lives in World War I more than a century ago. Waterloo has an American Legion post named for them. Now, two veterans of that post have compiled Becker's and Chapman's stories and the history of their namesake Legion post in hopes of keeping their memories alive and their post vibrant. Army veteran Dennis Sommer and Navy veteran and accomplished author and journalist Mike Chapman have donated their talents to produce a book, Waterloo Warriors, The Inspiring Stories Behind Becker Chapman Post 138, unquote. Chapman, a Waterloo native who lives in Newton, did the research and writing and is listed as the author. Sommer provided the history of the Legion Post and wrote the foreword. Copies of the book will be available for the first time at a book signing in conjunction with the regular monthly buffet, 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., November 12th at the Post, 728 Commercial Street. The book will sell for $10, and proceeds will be used to assist the Post in helping veterans in need and maintaining Post facilities. Quote, "It's been a labor of love," said Sumner, a 1955 West High graduate who was a U.S. Army guard at the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington National Cemetery in the 1950s. He is Post 138's historian. Chapman, an East High graduate and not related to Carl Chapman, served in the Navy in the early 60s. He has authored more than 30 books, founded Iowa History Journal magazine, and was a journalist at several Iowa newspapers. One of his first jobs was at the Courier, where Sommer was a longtime display advertising representative. Quote, "We came together down at the American Legion Post, and I got to know Dennis," Chapman said. Quote, "I love history. History's my passion. Always has been. I love Waterloo. It's my hometown. When I go to meet Dennis and saw his enthusiasm, he's like me. He likes to see things happen. Without Dennis Sumner's encouragement and support, I probably wouldn't have done this." Quote, "These young people don't know anything about Becker and Chapman," Sommer said. "They do the Sullivan brothers from Waterloo who died during World War II. But these guys, they just don't. Mike and I talked and he said, well, we'll write a book to keep their memory alive. My part of this was to get together the history of the Legion Post. He did the biographies on Becker and Chapman." In his research on the two heroes, Mike Chapman said, quote, "I was intrigued by the thought that they both died at age 22. They were both football players in high school, each for rivals on opposite sides of the Cedar River. The fact that the Post was named after them. I just wanted to do more to keep alive their legacy, because I think it's important for young generations coming up. And frankly, they deserve it," unquote. "It's important to support the Post as well, which is open to the public," Sommer said. He helped start the Veterans Relief Program, providing assistance to financially distressed veterans and a library of 800 to 1,000 volumes of books on various subjects. Chapman was the driving force behind getting a Waterloo Elementary School named for fellow East alum Becker, the University of Iowa's first All-American football player and a U.S. Marine officer. He had researched Becker extensively for previous works. Quote, "I'd done so much for Fred Becker, and I started to get very interested in Carl Chapman," Mike Chapman said. Chapman, a West High graduate, attended Amherst College in Massachusetts. He was a fighter pilot in the famed Lafayette Escadrille, a squadron of American pilots that flew for France before the United States officially entered World War I. After the U.S. entered the war in April 1917, Chapman flew for the U.S. Air Service. According to Courier files, Becker was killed leading an attack on a German machine gun nest near Virzon, France, on June 18, 1918. He destroyed the German gun emplacement, but was killed by a shell fragment. He was awarded the U.S. Distinguished Service Cross and the French Croix de Guerre. He is buried in Fairview Cemetery in Waterloo, one grave in a circle of fellow World War I soldiers. Chapman initially served as a French ambulance driver before becoming a fighter pilot, according to the Courier files. He was shot down in flames and killed in an aerial dogfight over Toul, France, on May 3, 1918, after attacking five German planes on patrol and downing one. He is buried at a Lafayette Escadrille Memorial in France. Waterloo's first airfield was named for him, according to Courier files. Quote, "I hope it goes over well," said Summer. He would also like to see some portion of the book sales be made available to West High, with the school's approval, for a permanent recognition for Chapman, possibly as part of a refurbishment of the flagpole area. Cedar Falls business cleans windows to aid breast cancer patients, filed by Andy Malone. Waterloo. A business owner gifted clean windows to a Waterloo resident who welcomed brighter days after enduring some challenging months that included a double mastectomy to remove her breast cancer. October was Breast Cancer Awareness Month. For the last 3 or 4 years, Kurt McCollum, a fish window cleaning franchisee based in Cedar Falls, donated his business's time during the autumn month to offer his services for free to women battling the deadly disease. The final week before the 2021 calendar flipped to November, McCollum, a familiar face in the Cedar Valley since 1984, helped Amanda Wood, who was diagnosed this summer with the latest recipient of his kindness. Quote, "One thing about small businesses is that they do tend to be a little more involved in the community, but it's not always on such a personal scale," Wood said. "It was really nice because my windows were actually really dirty, and they definitely needed to be cleaned," unquote. Wood's family has a history of breast cancer. She was on the lookout for it, caught it early when it was curable, and has one more reconstructive surgery on December 3rd. The fish window cleaning team worked for 90 minutes to scrub the insides and outsides of her two-story home and guarantee the windows will be crystal clear for the days ahead. McCollum estimated it was a $250 job. Quote, "Clean windows brings in up to 40% more light, and that's proven to improve people's moods," McCollum said. Quote, "If you sit in a dark room with a light bulb, then you are probably going to be more depressed than when you have a nice, clean, shiny, and sparkly windows with the sunshine coming in. That's the beauty of this job. People are almost always happy when we're done. It's nice to see that we're improving people's lives." Wood was raving about the difference in her windows after fish window cleaning work. "It's like, wow, you can see everything so well. It's pretty nice, and it did do a little cheering up. They are so awesome. They are so clean. It's amazing. Like, seriously, it's amazing." Besides cleaning her windows, McCollum said Wood have another special connection, their love of cats. In fact, Wood breeds Marshalla, Irish for my darling, ragdolls in her home, and says she and her cats can better see the outdoors, especially the birds that catch their attention since the job was completed. McCollum ran into Wood when he'd bring his cats to Personal Care Cat Clinic in Waterloo, where she previously worked. In addition, he adopted two of her Marshalla ragdolls. Quote, "Kurt has always been such a super genuine, nice guy," she said. "This kind of typical thing doesn't surprise me because of the type of person Kurt is," she said. Asked about advice for others battling cancer, she noted the power of having a support group and knowing there are always people who care about others in their time of need. For her, a lot of those people came from the cat community. Quote, "There is power behind having a support group to get you through the hard times when you are feeling defeated," she said. "Don't hold it in and reach out to those people, even if you don't necessarily know them real well and are not necessarily good friends with them. Quote, "Just having people thinking about you comes back to help you. It seems weird at first because you're like, I don't really want to talk about this with them. But when you're having these tough days, it really goes a long way," unquote. Her supporters call or message her, letting her know that they are thinking about her and sometimes go above and beyond by bringing her cards, necklaces, or flowers. We turn the page now and find we're in the Northeast Iowa Escapades Department. Here are a few of the events, shenanigans, and goings on worth checking out this week in the Northeast Iowa area. On Tuesday, November 9th, teens benefit from Little Black Dress Initiative. Motivational speaker Kimberly Fitton from Cedar Rapids will present The Power of Living and Operating Harmoniously at the annual Little Black Dress Initiative Luncheon Tuesday. The event is from 11:15 to 1 o'clock p.m. at the Hilton Garden Inn, 7213 Nordic Drive, Cedar Falls. The Junior League of Waterloo Cedar Falls is hosting their third annual Little Black Dress Initiative Week today through Friday. Its purpose is to spread awareness about issues facing teenagers in Cedar Valley. Tickets are $35. Find details at their website, jlwcf.form-org. Jim O'Loughlin is focus of Cedar Falls Authors Festival. Jim O'Loughlin will talk about his new book, The Last Caucus in Iowa, at 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Hearst Center for the Arts, 304 West Searley Boulevard, Cedar Falls. The event is free and open to the public. O'Loughlin is also author of the flash fiction collection Dean, 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 an editor of Kurt Vonnegut Remembered. He is the host of the final Thursday reading series at the Hearst Center, which is now in its 21st season. On Wednesday, November 10th, decorate a ceramic Christmas tree. This class uses glazes to decorate a 12-inch ceramic Christmas tree at the Waterloo Center for the Arts, 225 Commercial Street. During the first class from 6 to 7:30 p.m., Wednesday, participants will glaze the trees, bulbs, and stars will be added at the second class on November 17th. Cost is $35 for members, $46 for non-members. For details and space availability, go to www.waterloocenterforthearts.org or call 291-4490. Thursday, November 11th is Veterans Day. Veterans honored at Iowa Veterans Museum. Veterans and active duty military personnel will receive free admission at the Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum at 503 South Street on Thursday. The Veterans Day admission is in recognition for their service. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., visitors can tour traditional and more than 35 interactive exhibits, an electronic wall of honor, and other displays. The First Base barbecue food truck provided by T-Mobile will be in the museum parking lot, available to all museum visitors. Also on this day, Thursday, 20th annual One Nation Under God banquet is set. A formal dinner, flag presentation, and guest speaker will highlight the 20th annual One Nation Under God banquet. The event begins Thursday with social hour at 5:30 p.m., followed by dinner and the presentation at 6:30 p.m. at the Hilton Garden Inn, 7213 Nordic Drive. It is a joint project for the Cedar Falls, Cedar Valley, Waterloo, Waterloo Sunrise, and Waverly Exchange Clubs. Also on Thursday, make fused glass ornaments for holidays. Glass artist Candida Deary will teach participants how to create their own fused glass holiday ornaments beginning Thursday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Waterloo Center for the Arts, 225 Commercial Street. Participants can choose from three different basic designs. The class also will be offered November 17th, November 13th, and December 1st. Members are $26. Non-members are $33 per class. Children can make ornaments for $15 each, accompanied by a full-priced adult. Registration is 3 days prior to this session at waterloocenterforthearts.org. And the last item for Thursday, Songbook Trio to perform at Hearst Center. Hear song standards made famous when the Songbook Trio performs Thursday at 7 p.m. in May Lotta Hall at the Hearst Center for the Arts, 304 West Searley Boulevard, Cedar Falls. Jazz pianist Tom Triddle, percussionist Alan Jacobson, and vocalist Stephanie Althoff will present Besides Ella, the Great Female Singers and Their Hits. Now on Friday, November 12th, Brown Baggett for Lunchtime Concert. Pack your lunch and make time for music during the lunchtime concert beginning at noon Friday at the Hearst Center for the Arts, 304 West Searley Boulevard, Cedar Falls. The performance will feature You and I string bass, directed by Alex Persoonan. Also, the theater You and I dives into Fractured Mind of Eric Cobble. A unique evening of radio plays is being distributed Friday as a podcast by Theater You and I at the University of Northern Iowa. The wacky American playwright Eric Cobble examines the world of musical theater, theatrical ghosts, a Greek godfather, and the iconic theatrical character of Willie Loman and his love for jazz. This is a virtual event with more details available at the website. Get groovy, bodacious, or fat for throwback prom. Squeeze into your prom outfit from the 70s, 80s, 90s, or whenever, and rock out to the throwback prom. The Family and Children's Council of Blackhawk County fundraiser is from 7 p.m. to midnight Friday at the Hilton Garden Inn, 7213 Nordic Drive, Cedar Falls. A DJ will spin tunes, nosh out at a retro candy bar, and take time for the awkward prom pose. Tickets begin at $40 at their website. Now, taking a look at events for the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, November 13th and 14th, fill your gift list at Holiday Arts Festival. One of the most popular events of the season, the Holiday Arts Festival is from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at the Waterloo Center for the Arts, 225 Commercial Street. You can purchase original works by fine Midwest artists working in painting, drawing, photography, wood, glass, jewelry, metal, ceramics, fiber, and mixed media. Hungry Charles and Muddy Pirate Coffee Traders will be on site, and World's Window, located inside the theater, will be open. Holiday shopping season begins in Waverly. Stores will be decked out for holidays and brimming with gifts for Waverly's holiday open house event, which begins Saturday and continues Sunday. Sponsored by the Waverly Chamber of Commerce, hours are 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on both days. On Sunday, November 14th, grab a stack with syrup and support LPC Museum. The Laporte Dysart FFA will sponsor a pancake breakfast from 10 a.m. to noon Sunday at the Laporte City FFA Historical and Ag Museum, 408 Main Street. The menu includes sausage, a yogurt bar, and beverage. A freewheel donation is requested for this fundraising event for Friends of the LPC Museum Endowment. Find joy in Aya Yoga in the Park. Instructor Danny Eastman will present Yoga in the Park at 4 p.m. Sunday at the Hartman Reserve Nature Center in Cedar Falls. This dance meditation experience will focus on connecting with your body, heart, and inner wisdom as you move in guided, feel-good ways. Space is limited. Cost is $20. Register at blackhawkcountyparks.com. And lastly, on Monday, November 15th, You and I music recital to feature oboist Heather Payton, associate professor of oboe and music theory, will present a faculty recital at 6 p.m. Monday in Davis Hall at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center on the University of Northern Iowa campus in Cedar Falls. Payton is a frequent soloist and ensemble performer throughout the United States and has won numerous national and international awards. The recital is free and open to the public. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Monday, November 8th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, since there are no obituaries in today's paper, let's continue reading some local news, and then we'll turn to the sports page. Man bites police officer is charged with assault. Story filed by Andrew Wind. Waterloo. A 25-year-old man allegedly bit a police officer, drawing blood, while resisting arrest early Sunday when he was found pounding on someone's door. Martez D'Angelo Keller of 217-C Faraday Court was charged with two counts of assault on an officer causing injury and two counts of assault on an officer without causing injury. He was also charged with two counts of interference with official acts and one count of public intoxication. A woman called police at 1:40 a.m. about the disturbance at a residence in the 1600 block of Williston Avenue, where they found Keller and a companion. At one point in time, he took a swing at one of the officers. Sergeant Sean Monroe with the Waterloo Police said of Keller, quote, while arresting him, one of the officers had scrapes to his hands and knees. Additionally, he bit one of the officers, causing his arm to bleed as well, unquote. Ricardo Dion Joyce, Jr., who was with Keller at the door, was also arrested. The 29-year-old man of 1414-13 Shamrock Drive was charged with giving police a false name. Next, in news of the absurd, pickup crashes through the wall of National Cattle Congress venue, filed by Andrew Wind, and opens with a photograph with the caption, a wall of the Pepsi Pavilion at the National Cattle Congress was patched Sunday after a pickup truck crashed through it shortly after 1:30 a.m. Waterloo. A 28-year-old man badly damaged a bathroom at the National Cattle Congress venue early Sunday when his pickup truck crashed through the wall. Waterloo police said the vehicle, driven by Leonardo Ruiz Mendez of 320 Cortland Street, hit the side of the Pepsi Pavilion. It broke through the corrugated metal wall and partially ended up in the women's bathroom, knocking a counter with four sinks off the wall. No one was in the bathroom when the crash occurred. Officers were called to the scene, 257 Ansboro Avenue, at 1:35 a.m. Mendez refused a field sobriety test, police said, but they determined him to be intoxicated. He was arrested for first offense operating motor vehicle while intoxicated. The Cattle Congress patched the exterior of the building Sunday morning, but the interior of the bathroom remained a mess. Officials were waiting to get estimates on the cost of repairing the damage. Karen Coffin, who manages the Pepsi Pavilion and Electric Park Ballroom, said some upcoming events will not be able to be held at the pavilion with the bathroom out of commission. When officers arrived at the Cattle Congress grounds for the incident, they saw a fight in progress nearby. According to police, several people were trying to restrain a woman later identified as Jennifer Marilyn Ramirez, 26, of 1032 Lincoln Street. Ramirez allegedly punched someone in the face, cutting the person, and spit on someone else. Police arrested her, and when they were putting her in the squad car, she allegedly spit on one of the officers. She was charged with simple assault, assault causing bodily injury, assault of a police officer without causing injury, and public intoxication. And now for something completely different. Waterloo School Board to consider joining Technical Education Group, filed by Andrew Wind. Waterloo. Waterloo Community Schools hopes to join a consortium advocating for career and technical education across the state. The Board of Education Monday will consider approving a memorandum of understanding with four other Iowa school districts to create the Career and Technical Education Advocacy Consortium. The board meets at 5 p.m. in the Education Service Center at 1516 Washington Street. Other districts involved represent large and small school systems in various regions, including Sioux City, Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, and Woodbine Community Schools. The consortium would focus on advancing legislative, fiscal, and district support for career and technical education statewide. According to board documents, the five districts are seen as state leaders in the field. The memorandum would be in effect until June 30th, with the understanding that if the agreement is successful, officials will seek to extend for the following fiscal year. In other business, the board will hear an update on advanced programs in Waterloo schools. High school students can choose from more than 90 college course options. Graduates from its three high schools last spring received more than $1.32 million worth of academic scholarships and college transfer credits. And consider casting its votes for Brian Burton as the director, District 8 representative on the Central Rivers Area Education Agency Board. Burton currently holds that board position, which represents the school district. Now on the commentary page, Aaron Murphy, encouraging election for Republicans. Last week's election results, both inside Iowa and beyond the state's borders, appeared to project good news for Republicans looking ahead to next year's midterms. Some local races in Iowa and gubernatorial races in Virginia and New Jersey suggest that political winds are shifting back to the GOP's direction just a year after the party lost the White House and the U.S. Senate. In those gubernatorial races, Republicans' continued success in the rural areas should be concerning for Iowa Democrats, who cannot win a statewide race here without at least minimizing the losses they take in the state's rural areas. Also, in those East Coast races, Republican candidates bounced back somewhat from the pounding they took in the suburbs in 2020. There was a similar warning sign for Democrats in Iowa's election last week at the local level. Candidates aligned with Republican positions, remember that those local races are technically nonpartisan, so we can't call them Republican candidates, fared well in several school board races in Des Moines suburbs. If those are emerging trends, then Democrats could be in trouble. If Iowa Democrats are unable to improve on their performance in rural Iowa and at least maintain some of the recent gains they've made in the suburbs, there is no way they can win with statewide races and defeat the likes of Chuck Grassley or Kim Reynolds. All that said, Republicans, to borrow a sports colloquialism, should not plan to just roll out their helmets and expect to win in 2022. One crucial element of next year's midterm elections that will remain unknown right up until Election Day is what the electorate will look like. More specifically, whether former President Donald Trump's supporters will turn out during an election when he is not on the ballot. Trump fared well in Iowa in both 2016 and 2020, carrying the state both times, and down-ballot Iowa Republicans definitely benefited. Will those same voters turn out and vote Republican again in 2022 when Trump is not on the ticket? If they stay home, that makes Iowa Republicans' efforts that much harder. If they do turn out, electoral life gets a little easier for the GOP. There will be much political analysis performed in the days and weeks ahead. Did Republicans have a message that better resonated with the rural and suburban voters? Think, for example, face mask requirements in schools. Was it just the historical political headwinds of a new party in power facing difficult electoral prospects in its first election after taking power? Those questions and many more will be examined as last week's results are analyzed. Election Day is still far off, almost exactly a year. There's no guessing what the national mood will be like then, or what will be the most pertinent issues on the campaign trail. So no analysis or prediction this far out is a stone-cold lock. But the latest results, at the very least, provided encouraging signs if you're a Republican in Iowa, and warning signs if you're a Democrat. Let's turn to the sports page now. Padilla gets called upon to lead Iowa to conference win over the Wildcats. Story filed by Steve Batterson of the Quad City Times, and begins with a photograph of Iowa quarterback Alex Padilla, Evanston, Illinois. Alex Padilla had a pretty good idea about what was coming on the headphones during the opening minutes of Iowa's 17-12 win at Northwestern on Saturday night. The Hawkeye quarterback could hear the concerns coaches had toward starter Spencer Petras. They had believed the shoulder injury Petras suffered in the fourth quarter of Iowa's loss at Wisconsin a week earlier was in the rearview mirror. He looked fine in practice on Friday, but during pregame warm-ups at Ryan Field, there was no zip on the passes Petras threw. That continued into the game when the junior connected on 2 of 4 attempts for 4 yards before coaches opted to make a change. Quote, "I think all of us were seeing the same thing. Spencer just couldn't throw it. He could not throw it with any zip on it," Iowa coach Kurt Farron said. Padilla, who had taken extra snaps with the starting unit in practice all week, found out over the headset that he would be taking over the controls of the Iowa offense on the fourth series of the game. There were some nerves, a sense of excitement. It would be, after all, the first time the third-year sophomore would be taking meaningful snaps against a first-team defense in a game that hadn't been decided. "There was really no time to think about it," he said. "You just have to go in and execute the plays." Things couldn't have gone better. Padilla hit Sam Laporta with a 2-yard pass in his first attempt, then found Keegan Johnson open for a 17-yard gain that was followed 2 snaps later by a 26-yard strike to Johnson that moved the Hawkeyes to the Northwestern 13-yard line. A handoff to Tyler Goodson completed the drive and gave Iowa a 7-0 lead it would not relinquish. Quote, "It was definitely a confidence boost," Padilla said. "To be able to put together a touchdown drive at a crucial point of the game, I was happy to get to see us get that touchdown," unquote. Padilla directed Iowa to another score on the Hawkeyes' next possession. He was quick to credit the work of the offensive line and the other skill personnel around him for helping make Iowa's only 2 touchdown drives that game work. Padilla looked poised, comfortable, and ready, traits coaches mentioned when talking about the 6'1" Colorado native after watching a growth spurt in his game during the second half of spring practices earlier this year. He found a comfort zone in connecting with Johnson, who, along with freshman Arland Bruce, had shared plenty of time on the field together in the spring and during fall camp. Quote, "Me and Arland, when we first got here, we were taking second-team reps with Alex. We feel comfortable with Spencer, too, but we knew if Alex had to step in, we already had that connection down," Johnson said. Padilla and Patrice provided valuable input as well from the sideline. Quote, "He really rallied around me. He was giving me a whole bunch of tips on what he was seeing," Padilla said. Quote, "Great player, great teammate. I'm with him more than anyone else. Big thanks to him," unquote. Farron said following the game that just who will start under center for the Hawkeyes in Saturday's 2:30 p.m. game against Minnesota will be determined in upcoming days. A lot of it will have to do with Patrice's health and his ability to return to form on the practice field. Quote, "I admire Spencer for giving it a try. He gave it his best," Farron said. Quote, "We'll see where we are next week," unquote. A review of tape from the Northwestern game will factor in as well. Quote, "You don't downgrade Spencer because he couldn't go full speed. We'll see where that is next week," Farron said. Quote, "To be a quarterback of a team that wins, that's a real positive." Quote, "I know this. Spencer has led us to a lot of victories, and tonight Alex did. To me, that's a good situation," unquote. Ferentz expects to let the situation play out one day at a time, adding, quote, "Hopefully it's, pardon the pun, a healthy situation for us," unquote. And now in Iowa State football, notebook, Cyclones defensive line dominant against Longhorns, filed by Ben Visser. Ames, Iowa State's defensive line looked unstoppable on Saturday against Texas. The line combined for 5 sacks in the Cyclones' 30-7 win over the Longhorns. All 5 of those sacks came from 2 players, too. Will McDonald and Enyi Uwasariki each held 2.5 sacks, and both were in the Texas backfield often. Quote, "We just had to go after their line," McDonald said, who now owns Iowa State's career sacks record with 26.5 sacks. Quote, "We didn't do so well last week, and we didn't get any pressure at all. We didn't do what we needed to do, so we needed to step up as a defensive line to get pressures and sacks." What made the performance even more impressive was Iowa State didn't send many exotic looks or blitzes. The Cyclones set their normal 3-man rush, but Texas made the crucial error of trying to block McDonald one-on-one. Quote, "Figuring out whom to double is honestly a problem our defensive presents right now," McDonald said. "I don't know how teams are going to try to figure it out, but they're going to have to try and stop one of us, and then it'll depend on the other person to get back there." McDonald and Uzuriki might have been the only ones to get sacks, but the rest of the line played well too. Returning from injury, defensive tackle J.R. Singleton forced a Bijan Robinson to fumble that was recovered by Jake Hamill. Zach Peterson had 3 tackles, Blake Peterson had 2 tackles, as did Tyler Onyedem. Quote, I think our D-line has played to a standard of excellence all year, Campbell said. Quote, I think Enyi has been phenomenal. He was incredible again tonight. Isaiah Lee is playing great football for this team. He was incredible for us tonight. He just talked about Will, and he was huge for us. What would Iowa State fans have said if you told them a decade ago that the Cyclones would play their backups in an easy win against Texas? That was the reality on Saturday. Campbell started playing guys lower down the depth chart midway through the fourth quarter. True freshman Deion Silas was in at running back. Peterson and Oyedem played a lot of snaps in the fourth quarter, and walk-on linebacker Kendall Jackson got significant playing time. Quote, what's really rewarding for me is, yes, some of our A players played A football, Campbell said. Quote, but man, a guy like Blake Peterson, who has been a warrior in trying to get better, he was in on some critical moments and played phenomenal for us. Kendall Jackson is a young man that walked on here and has been a really good special teams player for us. He played some meaningful snaps tonight and played really well at Will, weak side inside linebacker. After missing last game due to injury, linebacker Mill Rose returned to the lineup. He didn't play as much as he normally does, but he still had 5 tackles, which was the second most on Iowa State's team. Quote, yeah, I think Mike's doing good, Campbell said. We were being cautious and bringing him back slowly. It was huge for him to get through the game and feel good. I think he'll continue to progress. During the game, right tackle Derek Schweiger went out with an injury, but he was able to return later in the game, and Campbell said that Schweiger will be good to go moving forward. Now let's read the weekend roundup for swimming. Tigers qualify in all 11 swimming events for the state meet, filed by Zach Martin of the Courier Sports. When the Marshalltown YMCA hosts the girls' state swimming meet this Friday and Saturday, Cedar Falls will be well represented. The Tigers, 10th in the latest power rankings by Varsity Bound, qualified at least one swimmer in all 11 of the swimming events, and one of them is in prime contention for at least 2 individual medals. Senior Grace Fredericks is seated 2nd in the 100-yard freestyle and 100-yard backstroke. Her time in the freestyle was 51.73 seconds, and her backstroke time was 55.91 seconds. Cedar Falls doubled up in qualifications in 2 individual events, as junior Sutton Paulson also made the field of 32 in the backstroke. Kendall Malarow and Bailey Lehman qualified in the 200-yard individual medley. That is not the event that duo has a chance of leaving with a medal. Malarow is seeding 11th in the 100-yard butterfly, meaning she'd have to swim 3 places faster to get into the championship heat on Saturday. Lehman has the 12th fastest time in the 100-yard breaststroke. The Tigers have topped 15 times in the 3 relay events. Grace Bobbledyke squeaked into the field in 2 individual events, as did Sophia Mason in the 50-yard freestyle. Waterloo East Avery Hogan had the 5th best performance amongst the 1-meter divers with a score of 445.75. The diving finals will be on Friday, as well as the preliminary swimming events. The finals for swimming will be on Saturday. There will be a consolation heat for the 9th through 16th fastest times from the preliminaries, and a championship heat for the 1st through 8th fastest times. For Northern Iowa, Panthers claim 2 volleyball wins in conference play. UNI hosted 2 matches at the McLeod Center and won both of them, defeating Southern Illinois in 4 sets on Friday, then turning around to sweep Missouri State on Saturday. It marks the first time this season the Panthers, 11-16, 6-8 MVC, have won 2 consecutive matches. They edged the Seleucus 25-17, 22-25, 25-21, and 25-22, behind four players with double-digit kills, led by 16 from Taylor Alden. Kira Follert chipped in 11, while Carly Spies and Kalissa Amdorfer each finished with 10. Alden and Jennet Brand each distributed 20-plus assists. UNI created separation for Southern Illinois behind 5-0 runs in the first set. In the third, a 4-0 flurry turned a 2-point deficit into a 2-point lead, and the Panthers never let the Seleucus lead the rest of the set. After trailing 7-3 in the fourth, UNI rallied with a 9-4 run to hang on to the win. It cruised by the Bears 25-16, 25-17, 25-18, as five attackers finished with at least 8 kills. The Panthers had a hitting efficiency of .242, had 8 aces, and 4 solo blocks. Missouri State closed its gap down to 2 points in the opener before UNI scored the final 7 points. An 11-2 spurt gave the Panthers a commanding lead in the second, and a 7-0 run gave them the lead in the third they wouldn't relinquish. UNI has big weekend at Coyote Extravaganza. The Panthers women's swimming team faced 5 foes at the Midco Aquatic Center at Sioux Falls, South Dakota, taking 9 dual meet victories to just 1 loss. They split with South Dakota and swept South Dakota State, St. Thomas University of Sioux Falls, and St. Cloud State. The most dual points they scored was 168 against the Tommies. Only 1 overall victory was had on Friday, the first day of the competition. Freshman Hallory Domnick claimed victory in the 1,000 freestyle with a time of 10 minutes 50.18 seconds. Domnick finished third in the 500 freestyle, joining Amber Finke as swimmers with a pair of top 3 finishes on Friday. Sarah Walpole was runner-up in the 1,000 freestyle. On Saturday, 5 Panthers had victories. Finke won the 200 backstroke, and Faith Larson was victorious in the 50 freestyle. They went 1-2-3 in the 1-meter diving competition, as Taylor Hogan won the event, followed by Abby Hutchins and Hannah Taylor. Olivia Chambers was a winner in the 1,650 freestyle, and Lily Ernst won the 200 butterfly. In hockey, Blackhawks split weekend contests. Waterloo fell to Dubuque 5-1 on Friday at Young Arena, but rebounded with a 3-0 triumph over Sioux Falls at the Stamford Premier Center. It was not the start of the Blackhawks wanted against the Fighting Saints, as the latter scored 3 times in the opening period. The first 2 came within 2 minutes of each other, and the last goal happened in the final minute. Waterloo avoided the shutout as defenseman Tucker Shedd scored his first goal of the season at the 8-minute, 15-second mark of the third period. Mason McCormick and Owen Baker had the assists. Baker had a game against the Stampede, scoring his first 2 goals of the season in the first and third periods. His first goal came in 18 minutes 57 in the opener, and his second was 1 minute 40 on the power play in the third. In the second, Gavin O'Connell netted his first goal of the season at 6 minutes 27. 4 different Blackhawks registered an assist, while their goalie, Jack Williams, had his 3rd clean sheet of the year. Now we turn back to more local news. Local history author to speak at Hartman, Cedar Falls. The next Second Sunday Speaker Series event will feature Linda McCann, a local artist and researcher who has published many books on the lost history of Iowa. The presentation will be at 2 p.m. Sunday in the community room at Hartman Reserve. There is no cost for the event, and no registration is required. Join McCann as she tells about her research on the Cedar Heights area of Waterloo-Cedar Falls, the trolley that ran through the neighborhood, and more. The series features a different speaker each month on various topics related to nature. For more information, please call conservation staff at Hartman at area code 319-277-2187. The main entrance to the Hartman Reserve Nature Center is located at 657 Reserve Drive in Cedar Falls. We have time to read part of an opinion page article that says Top Pentagon General Warns of Geopolitical Power Shift. This opinion was written by Trudy Rubin, Washington. The world is changing faster than our sluggish political leaders, let alone the public, can manage. The COVID-19 virus and climate change move far more quickly than the international community, as we saw last week at the G20 in Rome and the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow, Scotland. Back home, rapid social shifts push many Americans to embrace fraudsters who promise to save them. The urgent need to upgrade our fraying democracy is blocked by GOP naysayers and Democratic Party infighting. Above it all, science is advancing at warp speed, while we humans progress at sludge speed. Too obvious to recognize that the changes from which we now recoil will be dwarfed by those of the next 5 or 10 years. That reality was highlighted by the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Mark Milley at the Aspen Security Forum on Wednesday in Washington. The general spoke of the uniqueness of the Chinese challenge, fueled by Beijing's drive to surpass the United States in cyber capabilities and space. His real message was the need to recognize the urgency of this moment. Quote, "We are witnessing one of the largest shifts in geopolitical power that the world has witnessed," unquote, the general said. He was referring to China, of course, which in the last 4 decades has surged from a peasant economy to a peasant army to the second largest global economy with sophisticated capabilities in space and cybersecurity on land, sea, air, and underwater. And listeners, that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Monday, November 8th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.